Welcome to NHL Draft Class presented by Adidas. All the information you need for the 2019 NHL Draft. I'm Adam Kimmelman, here with Mike Morial.
Doing well, Adam.
Last few shows, we've had some of the smart guys from NHL Central Scouting on to talk about the best prospects in the Western Hockey League, the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, the best in Europe, and this week we've got another really great special guest.
That's right, Adam. We got Coach John Wroblewski of USA Hockey's National Team Development Program Under 18 team, and he is on the line right now. John, thank you for joining us on NHL Draft Class presented by Adidas.
Hey, great to be here, guys.
So, John, you know, you've had the benefit of being around Jack Hughes for the last two seasons. Everyone, you know, has sort of caught on to what he is and what he's become. But when did you realize that this isn't just your average hockey player? He's a little bit more special. Was there a moment for you, either when you had him at the under 17 or this season, where you realized that this is something special?
Well, I think it's every time that there might be the least bit of doubt, he quickly adjusts your attitude. So let's start from the first time that I was on the ice with him when he was 15 years old. He came to skate with our soon to be U18 team. So he came and skated with Quinn's group there at the NTDP. And you heard about this kid from Toronto that's supposed to be really good, and you're immediately skeptical. I mean, how good can he possibly be? And so steps on the ice, and he's the most deadly threat in a group of national team players. You know, at the age of 15, a bunch of 17-year-olds, and he's out there looking, you know, he's this tiny little kid, but then he's wheeling around, and, you know, somehow he's got this magnetism about his game where he can attract defenders in and somehow mesmerize them. And even though there's these 6'5 defensemen that can skate, they're scared to close them out. It's like a Patrick Kane syndrome where guys just, there's something innate about those players. You know, and I think, you know, going forward with that, it's U17 challenge. It's, you know, how good can he possibly be? Can he hold off a 7-game, you know, thwart from the opposition where they know that he's the key guy to shut him down? And, you know, goes out in the gold medal game, and I believe had 2-2 in that game, or 2-3. And that was our first five goals. I think he factored in 4 of them right away there. So it's you know, just kind of that reminder. And I think that carried over all season this year, you know, where teams would key on him and run at him, and then, you know, somehow kind of like maybe take him off his game slightly. Then the next thing you know, he adjusts it and, you know, make sure that his attitude's right for the next situation or the next game. And, you know, he goes out and torches a team. So it's his constant ability to reboot. And I think, and kind of adjust, make little tweaks to his, whether it's his attitude or just his mindset, I think is the thing that to me he keeps pushing the envelope, you know, in just very slight ways or adjustments that makes him so special.
Now, when you're back there, obviously behind the bench, you have a job to do, practice, games, but is there a moment where, or has there been a moment where you're watching him and you almost kind of become a fan like the rest of us, where you sort of, he's able to kind of take you out of the moment and you're just, you know, amazed by what you've seen? Or do you have to really work to say, hey, he's a player, I'm a coach, I can't get too caught up in all this? Because it's very easy to watch him, the way he dazzles, you know, with the skill, the skating, everything that he does, that you just, you know, you become a fan and you enjoy watching him.
Well, I think that's the reason why we're involved in the game to start with. You know, whether you're a fan or whether you're a coach, I don't, at least from my standpoint, I love the excitement of the game. I love the speed. I love the skill. I love the tenacity. I love the passion that it takes to be a player. And if you don't appreciate, you know, that fine piece of work of art that's hanging on your wall, and you just look at it as an asset, and that you got to take care of it, I don't think you're appreciating, you know, what that work of art. And so, you know, there's certainly times where, you know, you marvel at what these guys did. And there's a number of Jack's teammates that do some things that, you know, that take you out of your seat, and you know, kind of catch you by surprise as well. So it's, you know, there wasn't really a day that went by, whether it be a practice or a game, or there wasn't something that you were truly, truly amazed by.
One more on Jack for me, because, well, he's earned it. But, you know, when contrasting and comparing Jack Hughes with Kaapo Kakko, John, of course, Kakko being the other draft eligible player of this year's draft class, it seems Jack's 5'10", 175-pound frame, and the fact that Kakko played the past two seasons with and against men is what gets the most attention. What would you say to those who feel Jack's stature will deter him from becoming an elite NHL player?
Well, if you just look at the way that he can generate the scoring chances, the way the ice is tilted while he's on the ice, and how much of a factor he is in each of those scoring chances. You know, I don't know Capo's game very well. I've never even coached against him. You know, I was hoping that we'd get to see him at the U18s for a little, you know, just to witness his excellence. But, you know, I can only attest to Jack and the fearless nature with the way that he plays the game, his ability to avoid hits, but at the same time, I just look at the way that he generates, and if Capo can, you know, can generate chances like Jack does single-handedly, then, you know, you're dealing with an unbelievable, tremendous, generational type player. But, you know, I guess the way that I look at it is Jack's electric nature. He will find a way to next year impress on people in the NHL that he'll be able to play his game. It might not show up every single night, but he is going to find a way. And the amount of scoring chances that he generates single-handedly will continue at the next level and the highest level, which is the National League.
All right, let's shift to a couple of Jack's teammates for a little bit.
Sure.
Cole Caulfield, the goal scoring, you know, it's obvious, 72 goals this season, just jumps off the page. But he has other gifts on the ice, the vision, the passing. Do those traits sort of get overlooked a little bit and all the other good things that he can do?
Yes, they do. They absolutely do. I think that whether or not he was a 30-goal guy, he should be a first-round pick. And then the fact that he has filled the net like he has, I mean, that to me, I'd be amazed if he got out of the top 10. But I think, you know, his speed, for instance, is far misrepresented when he's spoken of. He actually has another gear, which I think, you know, a lot of people have compared him to some smaller guys that, in the past that maybe didn't skate all that well at the time. They need a little more power, a little more jump to their stride. This kid's already got that. He can break away from defenders. He's got a motor on him. He can take a 2-minute shift and still produce at the end of it and still be able to defend at the end of it. And his 200-foot game is absolutely outstanding. His defensive play, I trust him so much in the, you know, and if we're up a goal, I know that he's going to take care of house and home. His positioning, his innate ability to find the right structural spots in the defensive zone and knows his responsibility and where the weak spots are, is truly unparalleled, from a team that has a lot of really good defensive players. And then for me, it's his vision, whether it's a crossing pattern, a pull up on the line rush, deft plays in the neutral zone to advance pucks. And then of course, you know, the thing is we didn't even use him as a power play quarterback, and he can do that. Like, we used him very early on, as a half wall guy that, you know, kind of commanded the puck, but you know, there's going to be a team like next year for Wisconsin. I'd be surprised if they didn't put him in more of a quarterbacking position where he's actually gonna be able to distribute some more and trigger the puck from, you know, not just the Ovi spot over there, that they actually run the power play through him. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of untapped ability with this guy, but you know, I can't talk enough about his game. You should see his passion for this sport and to play. It's I've never seen anything like it. How much he burns to be a player and how much he loves to play hockey is truly amazing to see it.
One of the things I want to touch on, something you said there about comparing him to or not comparing him to smaller players. The guy who I think of when I watch Cole is Phil Kessel, just because of the things you mentioned: the skating, the vision, the passing ability. You've seen him. Is that a fair comparison?
I think that is. It's interesting you mentioned Phil's prowess on the power play. How good of a shot he has. He's an adept playmaker as well. And you know, I think that's certainly the type of, you know, when Phil's on his game, that's the way Cole is. And I think one of the most intriguing things about Cole from my viewings is his consistency level too. I mean, you'd be hard pressed to find a game where he did not play well. And that's saying a lot. Over the course of the season and Division I schedule, there was rarely a day where you could say the Cole didn't play, at least a B-plus game. And for him, that's generating 5, 6, 7 scoring chances all on his own.
Trevor Zegras, to me, is a player who sometimes gets overlooked. But this kid did everything for you, John, on the ice, and is such a competitor. He's ranked number 6 in NHL Central Scouting's final rankings of North American skaters, had 78 points, 26 goals. What would the NHL team drafting him be getting?
Well, you're getting an A1 pivot, and also a player who immediately can step into your lineup and play on the wing. So he's going to be able to transcend it. He's going to be able to get to the NHL quicker than some would think, because he can slide over to the wing to gain a coach's confidence. Very difficult for a 19 or 20 year old to jump into that league, of course, and play through the middle of the ice. But I think Trevor, his versatility is off the charts. Probably he's the best guy we have on the power play. Jack's electric and makes a ton happen. But Trevor's passing efficiency as far as making seam passes and clean plays, through when there is when there is traffic or where there is a situation where the penalty kill for them is being a pestering situation, Trevor can dissect that the best on our team. His on the fly creativity is truly untouchable. Like with his spinorama passes and no look plays, he's the way that he creates is impossible to predict. You're getting a real versatile offensive player. And the thing that he's grown so far in my opinion is the way that he carries himself. As a young pro, he's grown up a ton since he got here, and I still think that there's a lot of room for him to continue to find another level of maturity and professionalism, which I think I look at as a plus as well. So I think that he's got that, and then his 200-foot tenacity. Like this kid, the way that he plays in his D zone, he has grown so much, and the way that he wants to battle and compete and win is truly, truly remarkable. And yeah, the team that gets him is getting a heck of a player.
At the World Under-18s, did Alex Turcotte maybe have the chance to showcase the full skill set in a way that he didn't maybe get to do during the regular season because of the injury issues that he dealt with?
Well, the U-18s were an interesting kind of scenario for us, where we had Trevor, going back to him, he was playing at maybe 75% in that tournament with an upper body injury that he sustained in exhibition. Alex played that tournament with recovering from mononucleosis. I think that he was a fraction of himself. If you look back at the Russia game in the prelims, I thought that was where he was at his best. But other than that, I didn't think that he carried the play like he normally does. And there's no doubt that he was playing around that 75% mark as well. But Alex, when he was healthy this year, was basically unstoppable, particularly on the NHL sheet.
Goalie Spencer Knight tied the single-season NTTB record with 32 wins this season, set the program record with 59 wins in 78 games over 2 seasons. The thing I remember most about Spencer is in the weight room and how meticulous he was, John, when I was there, making sure he got the most out of his off-ice training. He was always the last guy to finish his reps. How dedicated is Knight? How focused is he? And do you think a team should consider selecting him early in the draft because he is that special an athlete?
Yeah, he's meticulous, and I know that we ended up losing that game in the semis to Russia, and that he wasn't perfect at the tournament as one would call it. But also, what you have to appreciate with him is he's a guy where when you're in an NHL setting and you've got to win 4 out of 7 games, he has the perfect mentality to do that, to be able to maybe take an outing where it didn't go perfect for him, and then adjust accordingly and not get too high on his good days, not get too low if he has a bad day. But his bad days are few and far between. You're talking about a world-class, kind of a freak in regard to his athleticism, 6'2.5", 6'3". He moves so crisply and explosively in his crease. He knows his angles. He's got the ability to make the impossible save look routine. And then you don't have to look much farther than his puck play. I mean, the way that he, how much confidence he has to play the puck, his vision, and also the snap that he has, and the creativity that he exhibits with playing the puck. It's truly generational. And, you know, I think would I be weary if I were a general manager about taking a goalie in the first round? Absolutely. I just think it's so hard to find that generational goaltender that you're going to be able to slot in. But, you know, I think if there's one that I've been around, it is this guy. And, you know, we worked with Jack Campbell with the 92s, and you compare him to Knight at the same time. And like Jack went 13th, and he's finally, you know, made his way to the NHL with that pressure of being a first round pick and everybody trying to, you know, push and get him to the show as quickly as he possibly can. I think Spencer has something very unique about him, the way that he's built mentally and physically to be able to persevere and play in the National League as a young pro and continue to hone his game and grow and be that generational pick.
Sticking to the defensive side of things here, how much has defenseman Cameron York, he's number 12 on Central Scouting's final rankings of North Americans, how much has he improved from his U-17 season to the end of this season, and what are his greatest strengths? And can you compare his style to any NHL defenseman today?
Yeah, his game is incrementally how he just continues to get better each day, whether it's all of a sudden you're watching his one-timer and you're like, wow, that thing has some sizzle on it today, or, you know, and then it's, you know, or his ability to jump in the play, you create on his own in the offensive zone. We have the confidence to be able to beat a guy one-on-one at the blue line and then make something happen and find a guy in the backside. That's, you know, I think that his game just continues to grow. He's got ice in his veins. I think that's probably his number one attribute. He doesn't ever panic. He's so efficient in every facet of the game, whether it's you want him on the breakout and it's clean exits, or you need him to block a shot off of face off, you know, something, we lose a clean one and he's got to wear a puck from the point. He's going to do it. And he's going to come back to the bench with a smile on his face. And you'd expect a guy that, you know, puts up the amount of points that he has to maybe have like a bit of a prima donna attitude, or kind of like he's maybe a little weary to do the dirty work. And that's just the opposite case with this kid. He loves to play the line rush game. He's so efficient at breaking plays up and getting us going the other way. You know, there's not a piece of this player's game that's a question mark. He does everything at like an eight and a half. And then, you know, within the right scenarios, he's a 10 player, because if you surround him with the right players and he continues to just make these the right play, break up the rush, get us going on offense, he racks up assists because of his efficiency levels. So, you know, is there anything glaring out there that's like mind popping or, you know, anything that is so impressive with this guy? No, there's nothing one characteristic, but I think that the mark of a defenseman is that sometimes you don't notice them because they're so efficient on the ice. I mean, Nick Lidstrom, he's cut out of that same ilk. You know, of course it's not, I'm not saying that this guy's going to be Nick Lidstrom, but the efficiency level that Nick played with is very akin to how Cam dissects a game and gets through a game. And so, you know, there's a really, really solid prospect there. And I think that, you know, if there's somebody out there that I would compare him to right now, it's probably Morgan Riley there in Toronto. You know, does a great job on the power play with those top guys, and he's really good at distributing the puck. And I think Cam is growing into his quarterback role on the PP and really understands, you know, the importance of that shot from the top and of course being able to distribute to the flanks.
Staying on the back end for a minute, Alex Vlasic, defenseman, has a size of 6'6", almost 200 pounds. But what are the things he needs to work on moving forward starting next season at Boston University?
Well, I think he's going to need to make sure that he owns up to the opportunity that he earns at BU. And on that side of things, I mean that he continues to bolster his offensive game. And I think that, you know, what people, I think there's detractors out there that's, you know, would say that he didn't run a power play, which is true. But if you go back and look, like we didn't always just run two units. There was a lot of you know, poise and opportunity for guys to show their traits on the power play. And if you go back and watch his clips from this season when he was on the power play, you're going to see some stuff. You're going to see the vision. You're going to see the shot. And it just, with us and, you know, our development pattern for him, it wasn't to be an A1 power play guy plus be the shutdown defender that we're trying to, you know, really institute into his game. So it's for him to go out and run that, you know, be able to run a top power play, which I believe he's going to do in the National Hockey League someday. I think that he has, you know, of course, Zdeno Chara is now 42 years old, and that's no longer his role with Boston. But there was a long time in there where he was that power play guy that knew where to get the pucks out to the flanks. He knew how to get it down to the net, put up 50, 55 points a year. He's this guy, Vlasic, probably isn't as dynamic as Hedman. Mike and I saw Hedman live there in Detroit back in March, but it's not far off. It's not far off from Hedman. His fluidity, his hands, his agility to defend and get up and down the sheet is truly, truly remarkable for a 6'6". And then I think he weighs in at about 198 pounds right now. But you're going to have a guy at some day that's going to be 220 who can move. And he's got great hands. He's got an all-around skill set. And he's going to make a general manager look really smart. And if he ends up sliding into the late first round or early second round, somebody's got a steal on their hands.
So we've talked about a lot of guys, high-end guys, and everybody's talked about a lot of the guys on your team. I think you've got 7 who could potentially go in the first 15 or 20 picks of the first round. But there's guys, and I'm thinking of like Henry Thrun and Marshall Warren on the back end and John Beecher and Owen Lindmark up front at forward. Do they get overlooked because of the Hughes and the Caulfields and the York and Spencer Knights? But they have a chance to be really good NHL players.
Yeah, I think I wouldn't say that they get overlooked. I think that, you know, what I would say is, if anything, they might be slightly undervalued, but not overlooked, because you know, anybody who really watches those games, they know when we don't have a great game, it's not always that our best players didn't play well. It's that those momentum guys didn't have a great game, or that they didn't get into the flow of things because it was a power play type game. But what I can say about all those players that are, you know, kind of scale down our lineup a little bit, is that those guys are equally as important to our scheme, and they are drivers. Like these guys, the way that they drive possession numbers and drive, you know, offensive opportunities, you know, to win their shift and, you know, to get the other team back on their heels, keep them at bay. There's a lot of momentum guys on this team that people are going to be impressed with and be very fortunate to have in their arsenal and in their system.
It was a great learning experience for me, John, when I came out and you know, was there for 3-4 days to witness what the National Team Development Program actually does to mold these players not only into great athletes, but also off-ice individuals. You know, one of the things that really struck me were the practices. The off-day practices were so intense. Can you describe to our fans how much these players looked forward to practice and going up against their teammates, which, of course, were some of the best players in the country every single day?
Yeah, I think that, you know, a lot of people, you know, talk about the games, and, you know, I think it, once you get to higher levels, you know, in-game coaching strategy and being able to adapt on the fly is so critical for success. But really at our level, I think the most important thing that we do is our practices. I think that the way, you know, we cultivate the players and, you know, the ideals of speed, power, creativity, all those are honed on the ice at the program. And, you know, of course, we take a great deal of pride in mentoring these guys off the ice and having them prepared for specific opponents. But I think that, you know, when we sit down and as a staff, and a lot of days, your practice planning is an hour and a half, 2 hours long. You know, whether you're talking about different players or development opportunities that we have with these guys, you know, making sure that the 2-hour practice is running as efficiently as it possibly can. And the guys take to it. You can tell that they appreciate the input and the creativity that we need to have to make a practice like we do. And they feed off of it and give us inspiration. I think it's a two-way street. Like we see that they need something more, or that the drills that we've been running are getting a little stagnant. So it needs a It needs a boost. It needs a tweak. And these guys did a tremendous job of inspiring us to make those adjustments when we needed to.
So, John, I want to look at historically your program, your team right now. You've been around from your playing days in the early stages of the National Team Development Program back in the late 90s. You've been a coach off and on since 2007. You've been with this current group for two seasons now. But when you look at what you have, and you start with Jack and Caulfield, and you go down that roster, historically speaking, could you call this group the best two-year run that the NTDP has had, this group of players, historically speaking? Where would you rank them among other teams that have gone through the program?
Well, I think it's important to make sure the time plays out before we do anything like that. It certainly looks like we could have one of the most potent offensive cores that the NTDP's ever had. I love that our defensemen are all rock solid, and I think are all guys that are going to play a long time in the NHL. And of course, both goaltenders are, you know, to be determined on them, but they both showed tremendous promise. You know, I think we'll look back in five years, will give us a sample size. 10 years is the true test. I mean, the 97s are unbelievable. What the 84s accomplished, going back a ways there is so tough to deny their team chemistry and what they did. And of course, you know, it really started to turn the page on what the program can do. Just to name off a couple of classes right there, I was fortunate enough to be at the 92s, who had about a dozen guys who made the NHL and contributing still. So I don't know. I think it's pretty cool to hear people talk about that. And I think it, if anything, that's just an attest to what the program is. It's that you get the best players together. They battle against each other. They grow together, and they have to be, you know, steel makes steel harder there, and they have to forge. And if they're going to survive, Jack's got to be better than Trevor, and Trevor's going to push Jack, you know, just for one little kind of microcosm of what the program's all about. But if you have a collection of players who continues to push from the bottom up, the middle guys are pushed and from the bottom, and the middle is pushing the top guys, you've got something special. And we had that for 2 years, and something we're looking to recreate here with the 03 class, which I'm really excited about as well.
Hey, John, one last question before we let you go here. Bobby Brink was a player you had at the World Under 18s.
Yep.
What did you learn about him? I know he played in the USHL all season. I'm sure you saw him when you'd go into, you know, play him in league games. But what did you see? What did you learn about him from being around him every day at the tournament? And what did you like about his game?
Yeah, Bobby's a great kid. We actually had him last year for a stint while we were in the playoffs, and we needed affiliate players. And so Bobby came in and joined us for our playoff run last year. And what you've got is you got a real competitive kid. I think that's one thing that to me that it kind of gets misrepresented maybe possibly in when they start to talk about his spot in the draft. He's extremely competitive and extremely smart. His ability to pick up a drill or to pick up a system tweak is really impressive. And then just his hockey IQ is off the charts. I mean, it is ridiculously. He is so smart. He knows he's got patience, but he's got urgency in his game as well. Just a perfect blend there of a hockey player. Reminds me a lot of Justin Williams. You know, I guess, you know, Justin Williams is, of course, going to be, known for his game 7 prowess, but that same type of like greasy, just ability to play the game and knowing the game and the game's nuances. And I just see that same type of gamer, as that. So, I love Bobby as a kid, and he was another guy that wasn't playing at 100% at that tournament there. He was, he had a nasty flu coming out of his playoff run with Sioux City, and I don't think he ever quite found his game. I thought it was a little bit here and there. We saw glimpses, but I thought he was pretty worn down for us as well. So I think he while he showed flashes, I don't think he was at his best.
All right. Well, John, thank you for joining us on NHL Draft Class presented by Adidas, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, John.
That was John Robleski, the coach of USA Hockey's National Team Development Program Under 18 team. Mike, there is a lot there to unpack. He's got a heck of a team, so there's a lot there to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, there is. You know, you look at the NTDP this year, and Central Scouting has 20 actually players that are ranked in their final rankings, including both goaltenders. So that just tells you the depth of the NTTB this year. They expect maybe 20 players to be drafted here in 2019, which is exceptional. So so many records were set by this team. And, you know, you asked the last question here to John about Bobby Brink, Adam. And one other thing about Bobby Brink, in addition to what everything that John had told you, was, you know, he was named the USHL Forward of the Year. And after Sioux City lost to Sioux Falls in the USHL playoffs and Brink's season ended in the USHL, obviously he was invited to the U18s in Sweden, and he came down with an illness. He had the flu. He still flew to Sweden. And then what did he do? He had 3 goals, 3 assists, 6 points, a +3 rating in 5 games to help the U.S. win a bronze medal there. So that just tells you a little bit about the character of Bobby Brink and what he's able to bring. I know he's a little on the smaller side at 5'8", 159, but he's going to the University of Denver next year, and he'll play and he'll learn, he'll mature, he'll grow, you know, for 2-3 seasons with that program.
And again, we've talked about this in the past. Guys who are on the small side, if they go to college, it's the perfect fit for them, because what are they going to do? They're going to play games on the weekends, and the other days in the week, they'll be in the gym, they'll be working on their skills, they'll be getting bigger, getting stronger. I think, you know, yes, you only play 35 or 40 games compared to 68 to 72 if you go to the Canadian Hockey League, so there's a difference there. But what you don't have in the Canadian Hockey League that you do in college is just that time. That time to get bigger, that time to get stronger, that time to work in the gym on the off-ice stuff. And you heard him mention it about when I asked him about Alex Vlasic. So here's a guy who's already 6'6". He's already 197, 198 pounds. You have to think, 2 years of college, 3 years of college, he's going to put on 25 pounds of good muscle that's going to make him, you know, from 6'6 and 198 pounds is almost a string bean to a fully developed guy with NHL size, NHL strength, you know, man strength that's going to help him at the next level. And he's going to get that going to Boston University, where maybe, you know, he wouldn't get that same sort of development if he went to one of the Canadian Hockey League teams. He would get the game experience, absolutely. Would he play against maybe a higher level of competition? Arguable. But, you know, you can make the argument that he would. But going to college for a Brink, for a Vlasic, is going to help them in so many different ways.
They just do a fantastic job over there in Plymouth, Michigan. And, you know, a credit goes to the coaching staff, but also those people off the ice, you know, the educational advisor, the strength and conditioning coach, you know, the trainers. They all help these kids. The one-on-one meetings with John Wroblewski, you know, and then team meetings. All this plays a part in, you know, putting together the complete player. And we see a lot of complete players off this team this year.
But that's what we see. We see these guys come off that national team program as guys who are ready to be fully formed NHL players. That's going to do it for this episode of NHL Draft Class presented by Adidas. You can subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. You can also find us at nhl.com/podcasts. And a reminder to check out NHL Executive Suite, NHL Fantasy on Ice. The NHL Podcast Network is on the rise. From Mike Morial.
Thank you very much, Adam.
I'm Adam Kimmelman. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to rate and review. And until next time, NHL Draft Class presented by Adidas is dismissed.